Hello and welcome. You're listening to Writers Aloud, a podcast brought to you by writers for the Royal Literary Fund in London. Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Writers Aloud. In this episode, novelist and non-fiction writer Caitlin Davies confronts every writer's dilemma in her audio diary. How, in a busy week, can she find enough time to write? We also feature two recent highlights from the Vox section of our website. First up, here's Caitlin Davies with My Writing Week.
It's Monday, thank goodness. Monday morning, my favourite day. It sounds mean to say it, but my daughter's gone to school, my partner's gone to work, and I can get back to writing, which I do all weekend anyway, but only when I can grab some peace and quiet. Weekends aren't time off, there's no time off. I don't really want time off, I just want time. I even resent Christmas Day when I can't get much writing done. And when I am home alone, I don't answer the phone, I don't open the door. People say that's very disciplined, but actually it's probably just very selfish. So I've come into my office, it's small, I have to walk in sideways, but it's all mine and I can't work anywhere else. I've put our dog, a big staffy cross called Jojo Pink, downstairs because of her snoring. And our cat, Chili Pepper, has been thrown, I mean gently placed, out of the window. And so the writing week begins. And for me, that means juggling. There's no ordinary routine in terms of what I might be writing, but generally I start at about 9 a.m. and work for around 10 hours, although I might only manage half of that on weekends. I've got several projects on the go, all at various stages. For some I get paid and for others, sadly not, at least not yet. I've got bits and bobs to do for Downstream, a history and celebration of swimming the River Thames that was published a few months ago. I've been doing two or three talks or events a month for this book, which is unusual. I love being asked, but then I dread actually doing it. I've got a novel that's taken me 2 years to write and which came out of research for Downstream, and it's about a Victorian champion lady swimmer of the world. I need to tighten up the first 80 pages or so, easier said than done, while I want to rewrite the last few chapters, which are pretty rubbish at the moment. I've also just started research for a new non-fiction book, A History of Holloway Prison in London. I'm at the exciting don't-know-what-I'm-going-to-find stage, rather than the boring I-have-to-write-up-all-my-notes stage. Then there's admin to get out of the way, emails, finances to do. I should update my website and Facebook pages for two of my books. I try and divide the day so it's fiction in the morning where I'm feeling most clear-headed, and non-fiction in the afternoon and evening, but it doesn't always work out that way. But if all goes according to plan, this is how my week looks. Today I need to check that a books festival in October has received the images for the talk, make sure I get paid for a talk I gave last week, arrange to get objects back from the Museum of London that were used for a Thames swimming display. I need to write a one-hour talk for a festival on Saturday. Normally it would be illustrated, but I'm going to be on board a boat, so I'm going to use some display boards and I need to practice how that's going to work. Tuesday and Wednesday are my Royal Literary Fund Fellow Days, and that means commuting to the University of Westminster in Harrow. Sometimes I can fit in work between seeing students. On Thursday and Friday, I'll start work on the novel. I need 2 whole days straight to have a read-through, and I've been desperate for weeks to find these 2 whole straight days. It's nearly 100,000 words long, and I can't read it in one day anymore. On Saturday, it's the festival, and then Sunday I'll type up any notes and read some of my students' work, ready for next week. So let's be hopeful, Caitlin, and see how it goes. It's Tuesday, and I've arrived at the University of Westminster in Harrow for my Royal Literary Fund Fellow Day. I've got a lovely huge office on the 4th floor of the building, It's about three times the size of my office at home, with a fantastic view of autumn trees outside. Now, what did I manage to do yesterday? I got most of the admin done, but then I was sidetracked by responding to emails from two readers wanting to know more information on Thames swimming for their own research, and that took a while to do. Then there was an unexpected invitation to give a talk at a sports conference next year. Me, at a sports conference. I said yes, and now I need to write an abstract. This is a bit ironic. I help students with academic writing, including a number who have struggled with trying to write conference abstracts, and now I need to write one myself. The festival talk. The process takes me ages. I'd written a draft of the talk, and yesterday I rewrote it and read it out loud and timed it and edited it and added to it and cut it down and rewrote it and put it away and read it again, this time while holding the display boards as if I'm really in front of an audience, which always feels a bit weird. But today is a very different sort of day. I have a purpose. I need to be at a specific place at a specific time to help students with their writing. This is my second year as a Royal Literary Fund Fellow at Harrow, and I've realised just how much students struggle with writing, how they don't enjoy it, how some even fear it, perhaps even hate it. I'd go crazy if I couldn't write. They go crazy because they have to write. And yet it's often something simple that helps them, like having a plan, having a title, thinking about what their argument actually is. I've brought work with me to do because it's the beginning of term, and although there's a few students milling around outside in the corridor, I won't be seeing many for appointments today. So I'm going to try and write up the abstract for the sports conference and draw up a timeline for the Holloway Prison book so I can start plotting what I know so far about its 150-year history. But it's going to be a really long day. I end here at 5, and there's a meeting at my daughter's school that starts at 6:30. It's Wednesday, and I'm back at the University of Westminster after a very peaceful day student-wise yesterday. I love the journalism students the best, because I've been a journalist for 25 years and I never studied it, so I get to see how it's taught and feel a bit envious that I'm not a student. I love it when they come with features and blogs and profiles and interviews and news stories, and I actually know how to help. I don't often feel helpful as a writer. I feel more usually self-indulgent. Did I do the Holloway Prison timeline? Nope. Instead, I enjoyed myself searching online for a suffragette who was imprisoned in 1912 and whose granddaughter got in touch yesterday and wants to find out more about her. I did write the abstract for the sports conference, though, and tomorrow I get to start rereading my novel. So the percentage of time I spent this week on my own creative work so far is zero. It's Thursday, and I'm back home. And this morning I had a swim outdoors at my local Lido. I'm very lucky to have a local Lido. Probably I won't be swimming outdoors much longer. I'll move indoors once winter really hits us. But the great thing about swimming in cold water is you really don't think about anything else except for the fact that you're in really cold water, and how long are you going to last, and when are you going to get out? I'm going to start rereading my novel now, and as it's about a champion swimmer, swimming is research as well as general stress relief. I've been planning to do this for months, but various dramas have intervened. Yet now that I do have 2 whole days in which to read the novel, I'm a bit anxious. I can't bear to even read the first paragraph. I don't know how to get into the right frame of mind. What if I get stuck on the first sentence and fiddle it to death? Perhaps I should just wash the dog's bed instead or something. But no, I have to do it. I promise myself to read as swiftly as possible, because it's the general feel of the novel as a whole I'm after, Does it need to be sped up at the beginning? Is there enough driving the story on? Is the ending right? And if not, how will I change it? I'm aiming for about 5 or 6 straight hours of reading today. Any longer than that and my eyes will start to sting. So with any luck, in about 30 minutes or so, I'll actually be in another world. I'll be back in Margate in 1862, just a young girl first learning how to swim. It's Friday. I had an odd dream last night. I often have odd dreams when I'm working on a novel. I dreamt that I was racing in the River Thames when a suffragette jumped in the water with a placard saying "Votes for Women." My unconscious must be mixing everything up that I'm working on. My Swimming the Thames book, my novel and the Holloway Prison book. I've had a swim again this morning, but I'm not feeling as energetic as yesterday. Because after a full day of reading, I stupidly realised it's a school inset day today. So the school is closed and the chance to work at home alone has gone. I'm feeling pressured. There's going to be a lot of me shouting, "No, I can't make you lunch. Turn the telly down. Why do you have to have a bath now? I'm working." There's no way I'll finish reading the novel today. I only got to the part where my character's in her late teens and she's about to perform in a whale tank at the Royal Aquarium. I have scribbles all over the manuscript, an occasional tick when I think something's working well, the odd comment such as, "No, this is crap," or "What's the point of this scene?" And it worries me, when will I get back to it? Tomorrow's the festival, so maybe Sunday, more likely Monday, and then I will have lost track of the story as a whole. Today I also need to have a final check that the talk is ready for tomorrow, to look up trains and think about how I'll get to the station. It's Saturday. I'm up really early to go to the festival. I'm feeling frazzled. I'm only 2/3 into reading my novel. My character has left her family and is about to set sail to America. And I'm really looking forward to rereading this section, because I've got some great ideas of what I need to do with it. But I won't be home again until this evening. The journey alone is nearly a 6-hour round trip, and I'm not even getting paid. Why do I do it? Is it ego, being grateful to be asked? 2 years ago, I promised myself I would no longer do anything else for free. It devalues writers. To think we'll do an interview or give a talk or write a feature, when for the most part every other single person involved gets paid but for us. And don't even get me started on blogs. Why, if a piece of writing is online, is it taken for granted that you don't get paid for writing it? I'm tired of being told it's great exposure, that it's fine because I'm promoting my book. We're considered professional and skilled enough that people are expected to pay money to buy a ticket to hear us speak. But we're not considered professional or skilled enough to actually be paid. Publishing, the media, rely more and more on unpaid labour, expecting writers, photographers, artists, interns to work for nothing. But that jeopardises my future. And that of other people who aren't yet earning a living as a writer. The average author in the UK now earns £11,000 a year. This isn't a hobby, it's my job. I take it seriously, I need to be paid. But sometimes, even when the answer to my question of whether I'll get paid is no, I'm still persuaded to do it. Why? Why have I agreed? I suppose it's feeling flattered that there's interest in something I've written, that I'm lucky to be asked, that it's a rare chance to meet people who have read the book or will read the book. Because if you are a writer, then obviously you want your work out there. Okay, rant over. I need to go. I've got a train to catch and a boat to board. It's Sunday. And the festival, of course, after all my fussing, was lovely. It was the most beautiful day for a boat ride down the Thames. Most of the tickets had been sold, which is always a good sign. And the best thing, of course, was the audience. And there's nothing better than people being interested and laughing at the right spots. I also had a good conversation with one of the organisers on the issue of writers getting paid, which she was well aware of. But it still means I've still been thinking, is there any other festival like a literary festival? Is there a music festival, for example, where bands and singers come from all over the place to perform and thousands of people come to listen to them and to see them, and where everyone's getting paid except for the musicians? Would that ever happen? But it takes it out of me, doing these things. The hours of travelling, the nerves beforehand, the energy needed to perform and keep smiling. I once met a very successful writer at a festival, and he was complaining about the book tour he was on, flanked by his editor on one side and a publicist on the other. And I thought, oh, my heart bleeds. But now I understand better, because he was a writer, and yet the one thing he wasn't doing was writing. I've got another book festival coming up this Saturday, although that's in London and it is paid, and it seems to me the younger, more local festivals very much put the writers first when it comes to paying people. So today, Sunday, I will read some student work ready for next week. I'll finally do that Holloway prison timeline, and maybe I'll try and read more of the novel. And thank goodness, it's Monday tomorrow. Time to make a new plan. Hooray! New things will come up, of course, and that's the joy of being a writer. However much I might sometimes moan, the unexpected, the not quite knowing what each day will bring. But best of all is looking forward to stealing some time, some precious hours in which to actually write.
That was Caitlin Davies. You can find out more about Caitlin on her website at www.caitlindavies.co.uk. That's Davies spelled D-A-V-I-E-S. Next, we're pleased to feature two recordings from the Vox short audio section of our website. These two come from the Why I Write strand. First of all, here's poet Donny O'Rourke.
During a performance, I'll sometimes say, in our working-class household, my father never read to us. Cue sympathetic sighs. There was no need, I continue. The bedtime serial he improvised in nightly instalments was wonderful writing, although he would never have used that word. The store of lore and legend from her native county Antrim, which was my mother's gift in more ways than one, was writing too. Myself, I was writing before I could read. Family hyperbole suggests I used to speak only in rhyme for days at a time. To precocity, sadly, attention gets paid, and I wrote to get noticed by teachers, by girls. I was a celebrator, and as a nearly priest, maybe a kind of celebrant. Not everything in my childhood was idyllic, however, and like many writers, I was wounded into words. We revise the past, rewrite the scripts of our lives. We also make and magnify our myth. In my case, a romantic mixture of Celtic Ulster and the socialism of Red Clydeside. The printing of poems in school magazines provided vocational validation, but I became a writer in a more self-conscious and committed sense, performing songs and poems round the scout campfire. And then, with a guitar, trying to emulate the traditional musicians and singer-songwriters whose lyrics I loved. I'm still in a mentoring relationship with Leonard Cohen, despite his not being aware of it. But these days, as a man of doubts and dwindling self-belief, I find myself much less interesting. Worry about becoming poetic mutton dressed as lamb. As the ego diminishes, the lyric impulse falters. Yet by turns daunted and determined, mostly, I go on. And if I write, why do I write? Well, I did write, and there is an expectation and even duty to continue, because perhaps one day I'll come up with something a tenth as good as the writing that moves, improves, and amuses me. Because like engineering or nursing, the jobs my parents did, writing is a craft worthy of diligence and development. Because it's how I find out what I truly think and feel. To make a statement, a contribution, an impact, a difference, and a living. Because the bratty wordsmith of nearly 50 years ago still yearns to be a proper writer, one whose words mean exactly what they say. I don't own a cell phone. If I did, I wouldn't call it a mobile. We're mobile. The phones are portable. Right naming prevents innocent civilians from becoming collateral damage. So above all, I write because writing can be an ethic. In a time of economic depravity, when fairness and decency have been debauched by the sort of semantic corruption that turns entitlements into benefits and larceny into austerity, laws are language. Writing is power. We should all be writers in everything we try to convey every day. Finally, I write because unlike Dad's bedtime stories and Mum's fireside tales, published writing, even if little read, outlives and outlasts us, becomes us.
That was Donnie O'Rourke, and here on the same theme of Why I Write is young adult writer Sheena Wilkinson.
I write because I was nothing, and because of Craig O'Library. I come from what Northern Ireland is quaintly termed a mixed marriage, and I grew up knowing how to answer the inevitable question from the other kids on the estate. Tell them you're nothing, neither one nor the other, and they'll leave you alone. But they didn't. Being nothing wasn't an option. There was always this suspicion in 70s Belfast that you were the wrong kind of nothing. So I grew up not so much on the outside or the wrong side as not having a side. Being on the sidelines of every side, it's a good place to write from. I wasn't encouraged to play outside. Other kids were rough. They asked questions and I couldn't be trusted to give the safe answer. Because I didn't like saying I was nothing. The Craigie Library was 10 minutes walk away. I was allowed to go there on my own from about the age of 8. Sometimes in the holidays I was there every day. Inside that library I found the side I wanted to be on. The side that welcomed me in and didn't ask questions. The side of story. Of possibility. I found deliciously unfamiliar worlds. In Belfast, the police were armed and drove around in armoured cars. They operated out of buildings surrounded by high, solid walls with coils of barbed wire ruffled around the tops. In books, the police were either friendly high-ups or doltish village plods easily outwitted by clever children. Everyone lived in a village. Everyone had a cook. Everyone had a brave and loyal dog, and most people a pony. If you didn't have a pony, because you were poor but proud, you jolly well made sure you acquired one by the end of the book, through your own courage and decency. Yes, there were books more reflecting of my own reality, but they didn't hold my attention as much as the ones set elsewhere. I didn't want to throw stones at the barricades with Kevin and Sadie. I wanted to run behind the wagon with Laura and Mary and Jack the brindle bulldog. I wanted to ramble over the Tyrolean Alps with my pals from the Shelley School, talking fluent German. I wanted to crack my slate over Gilbert Blythe's head. I wanted to have a slate. I didn't have a slate. But I had notebooks, lots and lots of notebooks. Always for Christmas and birthdays, I wanted paper and pens. I filled pages with stories. Stories of children in villages, children with ponies, children at war, and later I wrote about girls falling for the kind of boys you never saw in Belfast, but about whom, thanks to the Craigie Library, I knew a great deal. I wouldn't have been a reader without the Craigie Library, and if I hadn't been a reader, I wouldn't have been a writer. would never have discovered my side, the side of the stories.
That was Sheena Wilkinson. You can find out more about Donnie and Sheena on the RLF website. And that concludes episode 80, which was recorded by Caitlin Davies and Kona McPhee and produced by Kona McPhee. Coming up in episode 81, we have the second part of biographer Nicholas Murray's interview with George Miller. Here, Nicholas talks about his book on the British poets of the First World War and his own career as a poet, including his most recent collection of animal poems. We hope you'll join us. You've been listening to Writers Aloud, a podcast brought to you by writers for the Royal Literary Fund in London. To subscribe to podcasts and to find out more about the work of the RLF, please visit our website at www.rlf.org.uk. Thanks for listening.